Newsmakers talk to Jason Miller.
David Blumenthal, the National Coordinator for Health IT.
The health IT sector is short of trained professionals. So we've created a nationwide health information technology training program. 84 community colleges are receiving support to train health IT professionals. This year we're going to graduate 3,400, and we hope annually thereafter to graduate 10,000 a year until we reach a total of 40,000.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
When snow hits the D.C. region, turn to federalnewsradio.com to find out whether your agency will be open, closed, or delayed. And while you're there, sign up for our email alerts for the same great information.
This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
We're going to be talking about the shooting that happened in Tucson, Arizona, and we're going to still be talking about it. I know everybody's been talking about it, but we're going to take another spin on it. We're going to look at it in terms of congressional security and how important this is, and really not only congressional security, but maybe just security for all of our leaders and maybe just security for our people. I've got Fred Burton. He's a vice president for intelligence at Stratfor. Stratfor is a global intelligence firm in which a global intelligence, and maybe, Fred, you can give me a little bit more about Stratfor, but a global intelligence firm that really kind of tracks all of these incidents around the world and provides kind of intelligence and updates for not only private companies but also governments. Is that right, Fred?
That's correct. And first, thank you for having me on. But Stratfor does try to keep an eye on what's taking place in the world, and we put out geopolitical analysis, counterterrorism analysis, as well as economic. We've been closely watching the events unfold over the past two and a half years in Mexico and so forth. But your listeners can find us at www.stratfor.com.
You know, before we go forward, I wanted people to kind of understand a little bit about your background. You used to work basically for the federal government dealing with counterterrorism issues. Give us a little bit of background about you before we kind of go into the shooting in Arizona.
Well, I'm a former special agent with the State Department Diplomatic Security Service. I joined the organization in 1985 after beginning my career in law enforcement with the Montgomery County, Maryland Police Department. And the bulk of my career was spent in the counterterrorism arena. I'm also an author. I published a book in 2008 called Ghost, Confessions of a Counterterrorism Agent by Random House, and I have another book coming out in April of this year.
Outstanding. You got the title of that yet, Fred?
Yes, I do. The title is Chasing Shadows.
Okay, definitely have to look for that. You wrote an article for Stratfor that I saw that really kind of caught my interest and kind of spurred me to contact you, Congressional Security and the Shooting. Break that down. I mean, we, you know, the article was very interesting in terms of looking at the threat and really talking about, I know, something that Secret Service and other agencies talk about in terms of protective intelligence and kind of maybe being not being reactive, but being proactive when it comes to this threat. What was your article really going into?
Listeners can find this for free on our website, but in essence, what I tried to do was explain the concept of protective intelligence, how you have to look at your protectees, regardless of the size of Congress in this case, and put together a baseline threat assessment, and you have to look at this in a concept of a living document. You create a baseline, you look at those individuals that may have the most threats surrounding them, and you can put together a threat matrix and identifying those individuals that rise to the top, and then providing a concept of protection that we developed back in the 80s after looking at a whole series of protection failures with individuals that had threatened our protectees here in the United States. And the concept is counter-surveillance, where, in essence, after you identify the most threatened protectees, you implement counter-surveillance agents. These are plainclothes agents that are deployed to a specific venue that, again, focus on scheduled public events where a potential assassin could show up, like what happened in Tucson. And your counter-surveillance team, and it's very, very cost-effective, and you can usually get by with minimal resources in this capacity. And you deploy your agents out to look for certain kinds of behaviors in people. And in essence, as I've studied the Tucson shooter, there clearly was enough warnings and indicators there that I'm fairly confident that if we would have had a counter-surveillance team deployed there, they perhaps could have greatly mitigated the risk, reduced the casualties, or even kill or capture Loeffner before he was able to strike.
You know, you're saying something that, you know, some people will definitely agree with you, and then some people will kind of debate. With all of that, is that a process? I mean, in your estimation, you've been studying this with Congresswoman Gifford. I mean, would she have risen to the top? I mean, in terms of the threats that were being kind of given against her, would she have risen to the top of this threat matrix, and that would have deemed, well, listen, we've got to put a number of resources, we got to bring more Capitol Police down with her, we've got to bring some local police to do this kind of surveillance and to put a protection detail on her?
I do believe so. If you look at Arizona in general, and of course we're based in Texas, and I've been studying this problem for quite some time with the host and range of issues with the border. But if you look at just the previous threats to the Congresswoman, as well as the whole Arizona immigration issue, the border spillover problems. And then there's another variable here, Derek, that's very important to recognize. The federal judge that showed up on site, which would have been a United States Marshal protectee, he also had been previously threatened. So, in essence, you have two high-value targets converging at one scheduled public event. And that's the kind of event that a protective intelligence unit would be studying and looking at and trying to forecast in order to get resources there.
Fred, let me interject real quick before you go on. You just mentioned two high-value targets, almost two VIPs who have both been threatened. I think the federal judge had, like you said, had a U.S. Marshal detail attached to him at one point in time to his family. Is it a matter of that the agencies are not communicating to kind of say, you know what, we've got these, you know, several high-value targets here or several VIPs who have been threatened before, and this would deem more protection? I mean, is it a matter of that the communication channels are broken?
I think what you had here, in essence, is not only the perfect storm of protectees colliding at one scheduled public event, but you also had a process failure and perhaps a human error failure. For example, this is not rocket science in many ways. If the congressional staff member knows they're going to a scheduled public event, they should make notification to the U.S. Capitol Police as well as to the state and local authorities that's responsible for that venue. Now, if you go back to the U.S. Capitol Police, which are extraordinarily well-trained, very well-funded, they have a lot of resources, they're federal law enforcement officers. In essence, once that notification is made to the U.S. Capitol Police, there's a very simple notification process that should be in place. I've done this 1,000 times in my previous life. For example, you run through notifications to the respective law enforcement responsible for public safety at the location, whether that be the local police or sheriff's county. Secondly, you notify the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force responsible for that area. And then you notify the DHS respective fusion center. And then the local police department, or JTTF, or fusion center, would have some very granular knowledge of the location. And I can't tell you, in times that I've done this in the past, you develop information that may impact on your decision-making as to whether or not to actually deploy assets. For example, the JTTF may come back and say, well, we're actually working a terrorism case in Tucson. We really appreciate that notification. Let us have a couple assets in play. Or the local police may come back and say, well, it's funny you called because we have some indications there could be a demonstration, or we're dealing with a couple mentally disturbed folks, so we really appreciate that. So in this case, and I don't know the nature, I'm sure the internal investigations will bring this all to light. We don't know if any notifications were made, either locally or by the U.S. Capitol Police.
We're talking to Fred Burton. He's a vice president for intelligence at Stratfor, which is a global intelligence firm. You're listening to Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
I wasn't born to go with the flow. I was born to make a difference, to make waves. I want my sweat and hard work to mean something. I was born to serve in the United States Coast Guard. If you were born ready to lead, to protect, to uphold the law, then visit GoCoastGuard.com. The United States Coast Guard. Born ready.
Sponsored by the United States Coast Guard. In cooperation with the Maryland, D.C., Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Congratulations on landing the job! I'm really excited for you!
Thanks. How's your search going?
Job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview.
Yeah.
And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know? The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C., Delaware Broadcasters Association, and this station.
If you only want to lose 5 or 10 vanity pounds, sorry, but we can't help you. But if you seriously want to lose 30 pounds or more because you're worried about health risks like diabetes, high blood pressure, or cholesterol, we can help you. And the trial is free when you call 1-800-600-7477 in the next 5 minutes. We're Sensa, and our revolutionary weight loss solution is clinically proven to help you lose 30 pounds or more. And now, for a limited time, you can try Sensa free for a full 30 days if you call the toll-free number in the next 5 minutes. Sensa is proven through science, but works like magic. In one of the largest weight loss studies of its kind ever conducted, more than 1,400 participants lost over 30 pounds on average with Sensa, without changing their diet or exercise routine. If you're serious about losing weight and have more than 30 pounds to lose, call now for your free trial. Call 1-800-600-7477. 1-800-600-7477. That's 1-800-600-7477.
Your eye is the model for a new camera that might allow higher quality images from small devices like your iPod. The camera captures light on a curved surface rather than the flat photo detectors in today's commercial digital cameras. John Rogers, a University of Illinois engineer, says since light curves as it enters a camera, this is more natural and eliminates complex lensing.
If you want to take out a lot of the bulk and the cost and the weight from the lenses, you can do that and retain spectacular image quality by adding curvature.
But while mimicking nature's eyes enhances static images,
we couldn't find any example of a living organism that has the kind of widely adjustable zoom that a conventional off-the-shelf digital camera has.
So Rogers engineered a hydraulic system that allows his photo detector to change its curvature to match changing images during zooming. For more, go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com takes a look at the issues surrounding cloud computing through the eyes of those who are using it every day. We'll share with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the FedCloud blog on Twitter. The FedCloud blog is sponsored by Cisco and Intel.
Human Capital Management for Defense is a highly anticipated training conference with more than 300 delegates and key speakers from Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, CPMS, OPM, the Joint Staff, UCOM, NORTHCOM, STRATCOM, DISA, DLA, and OSD. Don't miss this year's event to be held on February 14th through the 17th at the Sheraton National Hotel in Arlington, Virginia. Visit the website hcmdusa.com for more information and to register. Mention code FNR for a $200 discount.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch with Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Fred Burton, he's a former counterterrorism agent with Department of State. He's also an author of Ghosts, Confessions of a Counterterrorism Agent, and he's also the Vice President of Intelligence at Stratfor. Fred, we were having a real good conversation. I'm sorry I had to cut you off. Pick back up where you were in terms of the kind of protective intelligence that could have gone in to possibly prevent Congresswoman Giffords and the federal judge being killed and Congresswoman Giffords being wounded the way she was.
Well, I don't have visibility into how the process worked or didn't work in this case when it comes to the actual after-action investigation. I've done a lot of after-action investigations on assassination cases and threats of. But if you look at this kind of case, if those notifications had been made to the state and local police, you may have had a beat car, a local patrol car that might have stopped by. You very well could have had JTTF assets out on the site. You could have had the sheriff's department deploy assets if those notifications were made. But if you think of this in concept, and I was just reading the most recent report on the shooter, how he walked into the Safeway, he actually put in earplugs, had a conversation with a clerk there, then came outside. And if you look at the tactics of how he deployed, there's no doubt in my mind, having done a lot of counter-surveillance and having developed this specifically to protect public officials, a counter-surveillance team would have picked up on his behaviorisms. And quite frankly, I would not be surprised in the least if this individual, Loughner, the shooter, had not also, for example, driven by the congresswoman's house or office as you look into his behavior leading up to the actual day of the shooting.
Hmm. You know, and as I'm reading the article and listening to what you're talking about and reading the other reports that you are mentioning, you know, it does kind of start painting this picture that there were a lot of signs. And I mean, you know, as with anything, we start looking back at things and we start and say, wow, we did see a lot of things leading up to this, you know, for the future, as we kind of think about other, because, you know, we always talked about when I was in Marines, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when, you know. So, you know, a lot of people are under threats and there's always another shooter out there. In terms of the resources, I mean, do we have too many VIPs or too many congressional people to protect? I mean, can we really implement this across the board? Do we need to provide more training to the congressional staff so they can start paying attention to things more? I mean, what do we need to start doing?
Well, I think the first step was done last week with the U.S. Capitol Police and the FBI doing some notifications and some briefing materials to the congressional staff. You've got a change of the House. You've got new people coming in and so forth. This is not really a complex problem to fix, unlike many in Washington that I've been involved in. It's simple, Derek, meaning if the congressional staff makes notification to the U.S. Capitol Police of those scheduled public events,
mm-hmm.
then the notification process by the U.S. Capitol Police Intelligence Division or Protective Security Division can kick in, and then the congressional staff should make local notifications to the respective law enforcement. And I know that if those calls are made, typically those are come into either the sheriff or the Police Department Intelligence Division, and then a detective gets the case. They're going to run that event by the local JTTF to make sure there's no current terror threats, as well as to the local U.S. Secret Service office, because the Secret Service has a wonderful protective intelligence program that keeps tabs on those kinds of people from an intelligence perspective as their protectees move in and out of these venues. And But again, the U.S. Secret Service has learned from a long history of tragedy and intelligence failures. And in this case, I'm sure there's going to be some tremendous lessons learned, and I have no doubt that the U.S. Capitol Police will fix and implement new process and procedures to ensure this doesn't occur again.
Do any congressional staff or people like this, I mean, do they need to employ, you know, private security? I mean, do we need Blackwater types? I mean, just using that as a kind of reference in terms of, you know, things. But do we need, you know, private security details attached? I mean, I know the Capitol Police is only so big, and they do have a good number of resources, but, you know, they can't necessarily task out with everything, and then some sheriff departments, depending on where they are, depending on what's going on, some local police departments may not have the number of resources or the training to do protection or to do protective intelligence. I mean, do we need to also kind of say, well, we need to budget, you know, for this kind of private security detail for these open events?
Not necessarily. I recently took a sabbatical from Stratfor to implement a very similar program here in the state of Texas for the Department of Public Safety. For the state of Texas, with looking at realigning their analytical assets with the actual threat.
Mm-hmm.
And in essence, it very well may cause some internal restructuring of analysts inside the Capitol Police. But again, go back to looking at the entire body of Congress, putting together a baseline threat assessment. In that list, you're going to have low, medium, or high-threat individuals. The individuals that are high, you have to consider with a more lasered focus of actual the deployment of U.S. Capitol Police officers at those scheduled public events. At minimum, the notification process has to be in place so balls don't get dropped. And then, in essence, I would venture to guess that you will find, for example, threatening letters and threatening faxes and threatening emails and phone calls that probably have not even been reported to the U.S. Capitol Police that has come into district offices. I've seen this in my entire career. A college intern assigned to work for a staffer in some city may just blow off that strange phone call as a nut or a kook.
But is that just a lack of training, a lack of knowledge, or it's like almost, oh, we just see this all the time and we start taking it for granted?
A little bit of both.
Okay.
And if they are seeing that all the time, that's something that needs to be factored into the threat assessment. You know, there's a difference between an individual that wants to call their constituent to discuss an issue. But usually it's been my experience that some of these threats are buried in either the midst of the telephone call, the email, or the letter, and those things just get thrown in the trash or shredded, or, well, that's just Joe. He calls all the time. We think he's crazy.
Right.
Well, that kind of individual needs to be looked at from the protective intelligence perspective to see does he or she have a criminal history? Do they have a concealed weapons permit? Have they shown up at previous events and displayed unusual behavior? And these kinds of investigations are done all the time by the State Department Diplomatic Security Service and the Secret Service.
You know, with all of that, people, you know, keep on talking about Loeffner and saying, well, listen, he got kicked out of this school. You know, he had all these behaviors that people notice in advance. And you know, the school officials even took it, to a serious nature, especially with the nature of school shootings these days, to kind of say, listen, you can't even be on campus anymore. Is this a dynamic of saying that everybody now has to begin working together? Do we need a centralized database or a centralized kind of system in order to, you know, where all these individuals are tracked? Because there's so many different people who have their own databases. You know, you're in Texas, you're in Arizona, somebody's in Arizona, everybody got their own kind of system. What needs to be done in terms of information sharing?
Well, again, that is an issue when it comes to the kind of data that is collected, not only at the federal level, but a state level, especially when you get into the privacy rights issues. But if you think about it in concept, Derek, the DHS fusion centers, there's one in each state It was put together with the specific intent and purpose after 9/11 to collect information, collate threat data, and make sure that all the respective players operating in that state are aware of the issue. The problem rests with some of the firewalls that still exist between DHS fusion centers and the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force. For example, the JTTF may be working a terrorism case in a city, but the DHS fusion center is totally unaware of it. That's just part and parcel to the FBI process, mindset, and so forth. So there still are agencies that don't play well in the sandbox, so to speak. But from a protective intelligence perspective, that's why the U.S. Capitol Police notification system is so important. If you touch base with each respective police unit that has some degree of public safety responsibility for that area, you could pick any city, and you can contact the locals, the state police, the FBI JTTF, and the Fusion Center. That notification system then kicks in and gets broadcast through each respective public safety entity.
An Amber Alert. We need to start having kind of almost an Amber Alert system for kind of protection.
Well, it's if you think of it in concept of this, and you know from your Marine Corps days where you're briefed on missions and so forth, that even at the roll call level, the police sergeant reads, today at the university, there's going to be a U.S. congressman there speaking on this topic. And so everybody's in the loop. You know, the campus police is notified, the local police is notified, and so forth.
We're talking to Fred Burton. He's a former counterterrorism agent. He used to work for the Department of State for the Diplomatic Security Section, working on counterterrorism. He's a vice president of Stratfor. Stratfor is a global intelligence firm, and you can find it at stratfor.com. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. George on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The following content provided by Akamai. Federal agencies have already begun the process of moving toward computing in the cloud.
The government has already moved towards the cloud with multiple successful deployments.
Tom Ruff, VP Public Sector for Akamai Technologies, says this move toward computing in the cloud will have wide-ranging effects in federal agencies.
The cloud will absolutely transform the way IT is consumed. It improves cost efficiencies and really allows the acceleration of innovation.
Akamai stands out as the leader in cloud computing technology.
We basically are a cloud optimizer that allows us to run in any one of the cloud paradigms and be able to ensure a more consistent, predictable, and secured environment.
For more information, visit akamai.com. That's AKAMAI.com. Akamai, powering a better internet.
The Caps Kids Club, presented by Dasani, is where kids get in the game. Sign up your child for only $15 and receive an exclusive membership kit, including a Mike Knuble bobblehead doll, invitations to member-only events, open skates at Kettler Capital's Iceplex, special contests, and much more. To sign up your child, visit the Fan Zone section of WashingtonCaps.com.
Hi, I'm Neil Asbury, host of The Neil Asbury Show. Please join me and my guests each week as we discuss the importance of international trade, entrepreneurialism, small business ownership, job creation, and the American dream.
The Neil Asbury Show, Saturday mornings at 8 on Federal News Radio. The Neil Asbury Show is sponsored by AIT Worldwide Logistics, Yoakum Shore and Trossaven, and WTS Withers Worldwide Transportation Systems.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything, boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to him about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, nutrition, dietary supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit MyVillageGreen.com. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Megafood and Gero Formulas.
Hi, I'm Denise Ballou of the FBI. The case was revealed in December 1995. Operation Senior Sentinel targeted illegal boiler rooms and telemarketing fraud.
The case was hugely significant in that it's one of the few, if not only, instances I can think of where an entire crime problem was basically wiped out by very focused, dramatic investigation.
Keith Slaughter is special agent in charge of FBI San Diego. Formerly in Miami, he initiated the undercover operation that evolved into Senior Sentinel.
These were telemarketers who were really, really bad individuals who were promising big prizes and a lot of different things, preying on customers, especially the elderly.
Many were conned into losing their life savings, but the tables were turned.
Instead of using undercover agents in those cases, we used a combination of retired agents and retired citizens affiliated with the AARP to pose as victims.
Ultimately, about 1,200 arrests and hundreds of convictions. I'm Denise Ballou of the Bureau on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We've been talking about congressional security. We've been talking about the shooting in Arizona with Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords and other people being killed and wounded, unfortunately. We've been talking about the dynamics of protective intelligence, the dynamics of terrorism. We've been talking with Fred Burton. He's a former counterterrorism agent for the Department of State, working for their diplomatic security section. He's also an author for the book Ghost, Confessions of a Counterterrorism Agent. He has a new book coming up called Shadows, and he's the Vice President of Intelligence for Stratfor, which is stratfor.com. Stratfor is a global intelligence firm kind of operating around the world, monitoring terrorism actions and other actions on the economic and other areas. Fred, in terms of, you know, I was thinking about this as we were on the break real quick. You know, some people look at some of these actions as being criminal, and then some people look at it as terrorism. And then sometimes there's a disconnect between kind of either criminal intelligence and criminal actions and the world of terrorism. As you were talking about the fusion centers and the FBI and everybody else, and sometimes there's a disconnect. You know, do you see that sometimes where some people look at certain things as kind of being a criminal action versus the dynamics? I mean, terrorism is crime, but some people look at it in different lenses.
Certainly, and this goes back to the extraterritorial statutes that were put into place back in the 80s with the killing of Americans abroad, which became a real issue and created a lot of issues between not only the State Department but the CIA and the FBI over who was going to have the lead in the extraterritorial investigations of certain crimes. And I think for the most part, the FBI has won that battle where they have the lead responsibility. But I can say this, there was a lot of blood on the internal walls of the intelligence community over this issue because at times in the past, the FBI thought that they were investigating acts of crime in certain countries that in a similar vein as they would on the streets of Washington, D.C. and Newark. And for the most part, what you found in a lot of the international investigations were that the police just simply, or the local intelligence service just simply did not operate at the same degree of standard that we would. So there still is those walls between intelligence and terrorism, and you see it mostly in the format of again in the continental United States, but fights between the Joint Terrorism Task Forces and the state DHS-funded fusion centers. Information doesn't flow freely between the two.
I mean, with all of that, I mean, how would you define it? I mean, you've been dealing with this for years, and how do we take a situation that may be some kind of actions and somebody sees it as crime, and then how do we escalate it to say, you know what, based on what this person is doing over and over again, we should escalate this to possibly a person we need to put on a domestic terrorism watch list. I mean, where do we differentiate this?
Well, it boils down to really a Department of Justice and a U.S. attorney decision when it comes to the actual prosecution of an individual for a crime. But if you step back and look at the Tucson case, remember, the FBI doesn't do any protection. The FBI does protect the FBI director, but for the most part, they don't have a lot of experience in protection. And what I have found in these kinds of cases and these kinds of investigations is the FBI typically doesn't ask the kind of questions that will help you in the protective intelligence or the protective security arena, meaning it takes a State Department agent or a Secret Service agent to talk to a Tucson shooter to learn the kinds of questions that help their respective agencies protect heads of state or cabinet-level officials. And unfortunately, what happens today is if the FBI does get the lead in some of these cases, a lot of that information never makes it to the respective agencies that are responsible for the protection arena.
So it just stays with that FBI agent or that task force within the FBI who's working on it, but they don't necessarily talk to State Department, or they don't talk to Capitol Police, or they don't talk to Secret Service.
Exactly. For example, if you look at the shooter in Tucson, there's a tremendous amount of tactical intelligence, protective intelligence information that can be gleaned from his shooting spree. Going back to, well, when did you first start fixating on the individual, the protectee? How did you go about surveilling that individual? How many events did you attend? Did you ever get close enough to shake her hand? Did you ever meet her husband? Did you ever go to her house? If so, how many times? Those are the kinds of questions that my old unit used to ask, and I know the Secret Service asks, in the course of interviewing a protectee. I had a case in 1987 involving an individual that drove down from Massachusetts with a carload of weapons with the intention of shooting a cabinet-level official, specifically the Secretary of State. And in the course of talking to him after we arrested him at St. Elizabeth's Hospital, he started to tell us how many times he had conducted surveillance, and we never saw him. And that
happens. That probably happens so much.
It does, because when you're doing protection in your traditional diamond formation of protecting an individual, you get tunnel vision. There's only so far you can see outside of the immediate hands, and you're really fixated on logistics, meaning moving that protectee from the hotel door to the limo, and that's it.
Making sure they're safe within these small movements to protected environment.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. And the whole concept of counter-surveillance is to step outside of that bubble, look for the shooter on the perimeter, and neutralize that person before he gets into that kill range.
You know, we talked about it's not rocket science, but when we talk about it, it seems as if it's just common sense to share this information. I mean, what prevents it though, Fred? I mean, you've been in the inner circles. I mean, is it really that territorial that it prevents this information from being shared from agency to agency?
What I have found in the threat arena as it comes to intelligence being shared amongst those agencies responsible for protection, that system usually works quite well, meaning every day in Washington, the Secret Service is notifying the State Department or the Capitol Police on a specific person of concern. And quite frankly, it goes on more than most people realize.
Okay.
And then those respective agencies are supposed to do with that data what they want. And typically what happens is pictures are pulled from driver's license photos or surveillance pictures and shared with the agents or the counter-surveillance teams saying, if this individual shows up at a venue, you should stop and detain or stop and interview, make sure they're not armed. And it can be done very, very quietly, very, very efficiently, and you can usually pat down somebody very, very casually, in many cases, without them even knowing it.
With the rise of the amount of information, and I was reading an article just recently about the military and the overload of information. Now we've got people with Facebook pages. You know, I mean, I'm sure you saw the evolution of the dynamics of information out there throughout your years in State Department. And even now, you know, I mean, are we at a point where it's so much information to kind of go through in terms of, you know, people's, you know, rants and raving on blogs, on Facebooks and other things like that? I mean, is there so much information that, you know, now our protective intelligence system is kind of being overloaded?
Without a doubt. That's the one constant complaint I hear from not only the state and local and federal law enforcement and intelligence officers I talk to, is the process is geared now to collect so much information. The challenge becomes identifying that needle in the haystack out of all the thousands of documents and intelligence reports that you collect on any given day.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, how do you make sense of that needle in the haystack? We're doing a great job of collecting information today, but where do you pull that needle out? How do you make sense of what you have? And that's part of the problem today, is usually those kinds of needles become the Tucson shooters or become Abdul the Nigerian, the individual that attempted to blow up the plane inbound to Chicago.
Right.
Where do you find those people, and how do you rapidly pull that data out? That's probably the biggest challenge in the intelligence community today.
We're talking to Fred Burton. He's a vice president of intelligence at the global intelligence firm called Stratfor. He's also a former counterterrorism agent with Department of State. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. George on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Could switching to GEICO really save you 15% or more on car insurance? Does a rolling stone gather no moss? No moss. You're gonna have to trust me on this one.
Switch to GEICO now and you could save hundreds on your car insurance. For a free rate quote, visit geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
The George Washington Colonials defend the Charles E. Smith Center against the best of the Atlantic 10. Richmond, Charlotte, Temple, and Dayton invade Foggy Bottom in the fight for conference domination. Get your four-game ticket package today and be a part of the battle plan. Call 202-994-6050 or visit gwsports.com now.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few. The proud. The Marines.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday at 10 a.m. here on WFED 1500 AM. This week, my special guest is Julie Lenzer-Kirk, CEO of Path Forward. We'll talk about some of the interesting things she's doing with women entrepreneurs. The show is sponsored by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. For more information, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
Are you looking for a smarter, simpler way to save? Now you can get the benefits of paper savings bonds without the paper. It's easy to plan for your financial future with Treasury Direct, a secure, convenient, web-based system where you can purchase electronic savings bonds and other Treasury securities online 24/7. Build your savings by scheduling recurring purchases directly from your paycheck, checking, or savings account. Change how you save today. Visit treasurydirect.gov to open your free account.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. New research shows that exposure to the most violent videos reduces emotional reactions to similar aggressive videos. Dr. Jordan Grafman at the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke says this implies that people may feel fewer emotions.
The implications are that people are going to be more accepting of violence. There's going to be more toleration of it, not only as they observe others, but also in their society at large and potentially in their own behavior. And that is dangerous for the integration and the well-being of their local community.
For details on this research, visit www.ninds.nih.gov. Health Matters is produced by the National Institutes of Health, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
I wasn't born to go with the flow. I was born to make a difference, to make waves. I want my sweat and hard work to mean something. I was born to serve in the United States Coast Guard. If you were born ready to lead, to protect, to uphold the law, then visit GoCoastGuard.com. The United States Coast Guard. Born ready.
Sponsored by the United States Coast Guard. In cooperation with the Maryland, D.C., Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we've been talking about the congressional shooting. We've been talking about the shooting of Gabrielle Giffords. We've been talking about congressional security. We've been talking about protective intelligence. And we've been talking about counterterrorism. All hot issues, all important issues. And we've been talking about it with Fred Burton. He's a former counterterrorism agent with the Department of State working in their diplomatic security section. He's also the author of Ghosts, Counter Confessions of a Counterterrorism Agent. You can find that on Amazon and any other bookstore as well. He's also the Vice President of Intelligence at Stratfor, which is a global intelligence firm, and you can find their information at stratfor.com. Fred, we were kind of going in at the break and kind of talking about the overwhelming amount of information overload, and the complaints of people in the arena of counterterrorism saying, you know, is sometimes becoming too much and trying to find that lone wolf. You know, I mean, that's the scary thing about this lone wolf scenario, the person who's out there, who's not really saying too much, but is planning and about to do something very, very devastating.
Well, and I think that that's where it's important for those entities in the protection business to specifically have units dedicated to protective intelligence, mm-hmm. whether that be Governor Protective Details, U.S. Capitol Police, Federal Reserve, U.S. Supreme Court Police. The State Department and the Secret Service have very robust programs in this arena. What you'll find across the country is it's very hit and miss. If you think of this shooter and look at him in a timeline, it's clear as a bell at this moment in time that he had enough warning and indicators to indicate that he was capable of doing this. The important part is to go back to the day before this event, what was known about this individual and what was done, if anything. And that's really the critical part, because in retrospect, we're all brilliant after the fact. Hindsight's 20/20. Much like the Abdul the Nigerian going into Detroit with the bomb, or 9/11, or all the embassy bombings I've worked, when you look at these folks after the fact, it's like, well, how could we have missed it? And one of the issues boils down to is there's really a lack of understanding when it comes to protective intelligence information and making sure that there's proper threat assessments, baselines, and that you have analysts that are trained to look for those kinds of behaviors to ensure that the public safety officials in those venues are adequately protected.
You know, as we're kind of thinking about this, and I want to, you know, you look at this every day and you kind of see the reports, whether it be news feeds or talking to your sources, you know, what should we be concerned about right now? I mean, we've got this up-tempo of people and, you know, political officials now trying to ramp down the rhetoric. You know, is that important in terms of the rhetoric dynamic? But also, too, what should we be concerned about on a domestic terrorism front? I mean, you know, do we see certain things that's going to happen? You know, how Spain had the bombings on the trains, you know, other places have bombings on buses, other places have bombing in coffee shops. You know, should we be concerned about those things here?
I think if you look at the FBI success of late, going back to last year with the identification and the ability to work undercover operations against some of these lone wolf jihadis, for the most part, the FBI has done a good job, whether it be the individual that was planning the bombing of the Christmas Day tree lighting ceremony, to other thwarted plots like the plan to blow up the Dallas Wells Fargo Bank. Most of these individuals were neutralized by the FBI with a very aggressive campaign at looking at some of their chat rooms and forums and discussions in the jihadi blogs and so forth. So the Bureau is doing a good job on that front. A guy like the Tucson shooter is the kind of individual that can slip through the cracks unless you have some very fixated and laser-focused efforts to identify him before the fact, meaning he is not going to qualify as a domestic terrorist, so okay. Then the FBI is not going to investigate him. Was he of record with ATF? I don't know the answer to that question. Was he of record with any of the other federal agencies? That's unknown.
So the question is, what would he qualify for? Would he just qualify as a person who has some mental issues?
Well, again, you go back and you look at some of his behaviorisms and outreach and stalking activities surrounding the congresswoman. I clearly think he would be the kind of person that should have been of record with not only the Pima County Sheriff's Department, but probably the Arizona State Police, the Arizona Fusion Center, as well as the U.S. Capitol Police. Now, whether or not he's of record in the U.S. Capitol Police Protective Security Division, I don't know the answer to that question.
Right.
I would venture to guess, though, having worked so many of these cases in the past, that if you went through the file folder on him, there's probably enough indicators there that he should have been brought to the attention of the U.S. Capitol Police by the Congresswoman's staff. And he very well may have been. I simply don't know. I'm sure that this will all come out in the wash once the investigation concludes and there's any kind of public hearings into this event.
Fred, we're going to have to probably stop it right there. I'm running close on time. Fred Burton, he's a expert on counterterrorism. He's a counterterrorism agent who used to work with Department of State and work for the diplomatic security. He's also dealt with protective intelligence, not only with State Department, but now also with, we said, the Texas. You just kind of helping them set up their program, Fred?
I took a sabbatical from Stratfor to set up the State of Texas Intelligence and Counterterrorism Division, as well as the protection of the governor, state capitol, and the border security efforts that Texas has underway.
He's also a best-selling author. The book is called Ghosts, Confessions of a Counterterrorism Agent. Fred Burton, he's also the vice president of Strat 4. He's a vice president of intelligence. Fred, we're going to have you.